This was recorded at the 6th Chinwag Live event, The Dark Side of Social Media, on June 19th, 2007 in London. Featuring on the panel, James Cherkov of Collaborate Marketing, Cristiano Ventura of Microsoft's Windows Live Spaces, identitologist and entrepreneur Luke Rizel, Tim Ireland of Bloggerheads, and Mike Barrett from Compound Media, with Sam Michel of Chinwag chairing. The event was produced by Mike Butcher of tbytes.com, with podcast services provided by Perfect Path Consulting. Part 1.
Good evening, everyone. Thanks for coming along. I'm standing in for Mike Butcher, who, I should say, tonight I will be playing the part of Mike Butcher, just slightly wider and much, much more hair. The idea of these sessions is to involve you. If you've got questions, we would really, really like you to ask them and challenge the panel on all aspects of, in this case, the dark side of social media. So we're not going to do any long presentations, and we'll get right into it. I thought, as a starting point, I would dig out the obligatory stats that you have to front these things up with, so we know the scale of what we're talking about. So my April 2007 statistics from Nielsen tell us that MySpace has 6.8 million users, Bebo has 3.6 million, and Facebook has 2.7 million. That's a lot of people using a lot of social networks. The session times are long as well. We're talking 15 to 30 minutes of people actually browsing these sessions and spending all their time at work updating their Facebook profile with all sorts of... You know who you are. And if all the world's a stage, then you could consider that the social network part of the internet is a village. Or even smaller, it's a bit like Cheers, where everybody knows your name and your age and your gender, your friends, probably your email address and maybe your mobile phone number. They know what you look like. They know what your friends look like. They probably know when you were out drinking, depending on what pictures you've put up on your profile on MySpace. But this has been around for a while. I don't know if anybody knows the name Claire Swires. Does that ring any bells? There's a few nods around the room. I suspect there's quite a few people here who weren't maybe working in the industry when that particular dark moment in social networking did the rounds.
Claire?
I won't go into the exact details, but if you're not aware of her, this was going back to the days before the traditional social networks where email was the main propagation tool. And Claire was the unfortunate recipient, the wrong word, really, really the wrong word if you know the story, is the unfortunate victim, that's the one I was looking for, of an email that was sent by her boyfriend who was complimenting on her, let's say, performance. And he sent it round, and it went round to all his friends, and then it went round to everybody. And within 3 days, she was on the front page. I think it was The Sun, and it might have been The Times, and they ran a campaign to find her. I think he lost his job, and she kept hers. You'll be pleased to hear that she's now happily married, because weirdly a friend of a friend knows her, but that's neither here nor there. Maybe that's why she's... Anyway... On a more serious and darker note, I was on the phone today with the mother of my goddaughters, and she was telling me how she's having problems at school. She's called Kate, and apparently her classmates have created a MySpace profile called Kate is a Cow, and they've transfixed, put her picture on pictures of cows, and basically, I suppose it's cyberbullying, and... To make matters worse, the school can't do anything about it, or they're saying they can't do anything about it, because the filters prevent them from getting onto MySpace from their network. So she has to go home, get onto MySpace, and complain before she can get the profile taken down. She's 11 years old. Quite grim. And just another little story I'll share, and the names will be changed on this one to protect the innocent. So a friend of mine who was recruiting... for a reasonably senior post, had a bunch of CVs through, liked the look of one of the CVs and decided to progress with the interview. And about 10 minutes before the person was due to arrive, decided that maybe they'd check him out on Google. Didn't really find anything. Went onto Facebook, found their profile. And the last status message they had on their profile was along the lines of, I might be naive, but I didn't realize, rude word, was a particular position. And that was the last thing that they saw before this person opened the door and said, hi, I'm here for my interview. I think that's one of the dangers that I'd like to get into tonight is the fact that your life is now being cached on the internet in a way that it hasn't really been to this date. And the search engines are making it much easier to find that life that's been cached out there. So my quick list of some of the ills of social media, and this I don't think this should all be negative, but I think we should look into the potential for things going wrong and ways that can be avoided or ameliorated in some way. So some of the ills of a brain dump around the office were obviously the paedophile cases that have come to light because of MySpace, which I guess you could argue is a good thing because they've been taken out of circulation. Online groups being hijacked, death threats being made to Kathy Sierra, political bloggers being baited into expressing views that are much more extreme than they'd give in other forums like on TV or on the radio, identity theft, cyberbullying, brands throwing their weight around cyberspace and hoovering up people's information, public spats in blog comments, the transparency of brands online as well, pretending to be or using people's identities to convey the brand message without revealing the full extent of their involvement, spamming, and the final one, which I only discovered yesterday, not personally, I was told about it, is the sex trade that happens in Second Life. Was anybody aware that there was a sex trade in Second Life? It's disturbing.
It's on the internet.
There's quite a few definite nods. That's slightly scary. So what I'm going to do is ask the panel to give a 2-minute intro of who they are and also to share a dark experience of the social media that they've had. At the end of that, we'll have a chat and start thinking of questions that you'd like to ask the panel. We have 2 roving microphones, which currently are at the back of the room. But the lovely Deirdre and the lovely Patrick will be running around with those. If you'd like to ask a question, wave your hand. I'll point them in your direction and ask away. So we have a tip-top panel with some of the finest brains on the planet. And I'll start on my far left with Luke Razzell from the Identity Society.
Hi. Yeah, I blog at Weaver Luke about identity, and generally that's a concept that focuses various interests I have in technology and business. And I think it's... I came here thinking about... it's a really difficult subject to know how to get a hold of because... On one hand, you have the media shouting out about these various sort of disasters that happen to people in their personal lives. On the other hand, you have the big picture of the social web providing this huge amount of value. I guess my interest is understanding how, although our focus tends to get pulled into the things that really trigger our emotional buttons, like invasions into our privacy, actually the bigger issues are how the web isn't yet really transparent to who we are. And that's the deeper darkness on the social web, if you like. So although we get drawn into things that happen to us that are hurtful... I'm sorry. Do you want to start with someone else? I'm a bit tongue-tied. So.
I think we'll hear a lot more from Luke on the identity side of things, as it's such a critical part of the whole area. One thing I forgot to say is, I can't remember if Deirdre said this, please turn your mobile phones off. Thanks very much. Over to Cristiano, who is head of Windows Live Spaces.
Hello, my name is Cristiano Ventura. I'm the business manager for Windows Live Spaces. I do work for Microsoft. This is where the audience goes quiet. Thank you. Actually, let's put it this way. I'm Italian, sounds better, and I'm Sicilian. My remit is to make sure that our social networking platform just meet the expectations from my safety and security point of view. We do have a percentage of our audience which is made of children and teenagers, so our responsibility is to ensure that they leave the social networking experience in a safe environment. I guess my... nasty story related to social networking. It's actually about Second Life. It just enlightened me. I remember that I was working in Second Life with this brand new leopard pants that I built myself, and I thought I was very proud. And then someone approached me and I said, "Can you take them off?" And I thought, because they liked them, or obviously with this whole sex trade, that the intent was something else. So.
Thank you. The one thing I'd say is a big thank you to Christiana for turning up. We did ask the other social networks to come along, and none of them decided that they would join us. In fact, one of them said that they wouldn't come along because they thought it would be a bit of a bear pit for them. So a big thank you for Christiana.
Now you can boo.
You can boo now if you'd like. Our next panellist is James Chirkoff.
My name is James Chirkoff. I blog at Modern Marketing, a blog called Modern Marketing, and I work as a consultant helping companies operate in networked media, is how I describe it, which basically is primarily for brands trying to deal with the millions of issues that are coming their way as a result of all these new technologies. I must say, my general feeling, very happy for it to be challenged this evening, is that the internet isn't really very dark compared to the real world, because it is the real world. I think the separation between the two is the problem. You know, is when we, especially powered by the media, that, you know, the internet is like another planet populated exclusively by, you know, paedophiles, sex traders, money, you know, launderers, etc., etc. As for my own dark moment, I had I wouldn't really call it dark, it was very peculiar though. I had on my blog, I was having a discussion, and it was the type of very silly branding conversation that you'd only ever have on a blog. And it was about the French Connection FC UK brand. And a commenter on my blog was saying that he thought that it was a dangerous brand because if it could be taken over by the National Front, and they could write T-shirts saying FC UK Jews. So this was his comment, and I didn't really pay an awful lot of attention. However, the Jewish population of New York and their online forum took a very lively interest in this blog, started writing up about me being anti-Semitic and running this modern marketing blog purely as a guise. Which, considering my family's Jewish, that seemed to have no truck with them at all. It went on for weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks until I finally convinced them that, you know, this was a ludicrous conversation about branding. But it does go to show the new world we live in, I suppose. And if we get the chance, I mean, I thought the whole Cathy Sierra business was a great tale of our times. So if we get the chance to talk about that, then that would be great as well.
I think I'll ask you that in a minute, actually, because I think yep. There may be... How many people in the room have heard of the Cathy Sierra incident? Oh, very few. Well, we'll go into that and why it's significant. But first, one of the people who built some of these systems, Mike Barrett from Compound Media.
Thanks. So I spent 10 years in the publishing world. Building the systems, as Sam said, that hopefully will counter some of the dark side. And I think what's really interesting is, as James said, the kind of parallels between the real world and the online world, and that there seems to be, specifically in the media as well, this kind of disconnect between the people who populate the real world and the people who populate the online world. And actually, they're by and large the same people. And so I think that's really interesting about this subject. I haven't really had any specific dark moments personally, but I think I had a colleague who spoke at an event, an AOP event, the Association of Publishers, who was slightly misrepresented, very, very small misrepresentation, completely innocently, by The Guardian. And the gist of the story was that for this one UK site, and seen as a large organisation, but for this one small UK site, the editorial team were instructed that, because of the nature of the site, that they should interact with the community, very Web 2.0. But this was kind of amplified, and by the time it got to the US and 2 days later, this tiny, you know, kind of 5 million impression a month site was amplified to the point where the blogosphere were then saying all CNET are idiots. You know, so a 5 million impression site actually amplified up to the volumes of, so CNET's like 3 billion impressions a day or something. That's 3 billion impressions a month. So it was all completely innocent, but just the kind of amplification process through misrepresentation was quite interesting. And you know, seeing it's a mature online company, and that was kind of dealt with, and it wasn't a big problem. But you can kind of see how that stuff just gets out of control quite easily.
Thanks, Mike. And on the end, we have Tim Ireland from Bloggerheads, who is a blog supremo. Tim?
Touching, thank you. I've been looking at weblogs for about 7 years and running my own weblog for about six. And I got involved in politics when I, long story, started and ended up getting email intended for Tony Blair. I ran a campaign for Tony Blair's email, produced the first weblog by a Labour MP, and everybody shouted at me. Produced a weblog, first weblog by a Tory MP, and a lot of other people shouted at me. Created a weblog for my local then candidate and later MP, and a lot of anonymous people shouted at me. And it's you get sick of it after a while. In terms of horror stories, I've got some stuff that'll really curl your hair. I think I'll give you one of the juicier ones to start off with. There are two candidates for the position of councillor, and one of those candidates produced an anonymous website about his opponent, first of all, innocently airing these rumours that he was a pedophile. Right? It gets better. Once this was noticed and reported and they got away with it, they got bolder. So they went to outright declarations. The victim of the smears was gay, which from their point of view proved that he was a pedophile because, as we all know, all homosexuals are predators. So, oh God. And they published his face, his name, and his whereabouts, and they were basically begging some nut job, you know, like the type of person that doesn't know the difference between a paediatrician and a pedophile, to do him an injury. This was reported to Conservative head office. It was reported to the local association. It was passed down to the local MP, who patted him on the head and said, good boy, off you go. It was reported to Blogger. They still haven't taken any action, and this is almost 12 months later. That's probably my worst story. There's more, plenty more.
Oh, and we'll come on to those. So we've done some talking, a little bit of audience interaction, if you don't mind. Can I ask how many people have either their own website or a profile on a social networking site like MySpace, Bebo, Facebook?
Can we split that website at your own domain name?
Yeah, that's so if you've got your own website at your own domain name. So I'd say probably half the room's got some web presence and about a quarter have got their own websites. So getting onto the darker side, who thinks that there's a problem now with social networks and how they're operating? Wow. One. Four hands? Five hands maybe in the room. Who thinks there's likely to be a problem in the future? So that's probably getting on for a half. Interesting. So I think there's so many different angles we can start on this. One of the areas that I wanted to put out to the panel now is there are many, many children using these networks, and they're very web savvy, and they're getting onto them and using them earlier and earlier. It's very easy to create a space and put up all their information. Is the barrier to entry too low? Is it too young for kids to get online and put their information up there? I wonder, Christiane, if you'd like to kick off with that.
It's difficult to set up a barrier for kids because they will find a way of setting up their own spaces. They will lie or their own Bebo, whatever it is. Larger networks like ourselves or MySpace, they have age limitations. So if you are under 13, you won't be able to set up your own page. But then kids lie. I guess the concept is not about preventing people to create a page. It's just probably educating them. I'm strongly convinced that you can put in place the tools for people to act savvily and to do good things, but then at the same time you need to educate them. You need to partner with, I wouldn't say necessarily the authorities, but with parents and teachers, even babysitters. So it's just a combination of element. it's a complex issue that can be delegated to. Let's put all the spaces to private. Let's set up a space so that if you are under 18, you can't do anything. That's not the case.
So is that a default setting for your for Windows spaces? Is under 18, it's private?
On spaces, once you set it up, if you are under 18, your permission settings are set to Messenger only. So only your Messenger buddies will be able to see it. You need to proactively change it to make it public. If you are over 18, it's your decision. You go public straight away.
What does anybody else on the panel have a view on that side? Tim?
We had a quick chat about the default on Facebook with absolutely no warning whatsoever. For instance, I'll take you through the whole journey. Someone talks about you in a private or supposedly public conversation on Facebook, but you can't read it without logging into Facebook. So you join, you log up. It asks for the usual details, like a contact email address, your date of birth to set you apart from the other person called Tim Ireland. And the default setting publishes your email address, any phone number you provide as part of the registration setting, and your date of birth. I mean, that's... You know, if anyone wants to do you harm via fraud, that's beautiful, beautiful information.
So does that mean that the privacy laws that we've got are basically null and void if you go onto Facebook?
Well, where is Facebook hosted?
Fair point. So that's in America?
Yeah. Just like Blogger.
Moving on to identity, Luke, I was wondering if you'd share some thoughts on this. We're obviously exposing huge swathes of our... The ability for us to expose huge swathes of identity is easier and easier. Mm. What's your perspective on doing that?
Well, I guess I've got a very personal perspective right now, having frozen when I tried to introduce myself at the beginning. And I think that really took me back personally to what this is all about, which is authenticity. Because I found myself feeling like I couldn't just talk as me from my own identity. And I think it's really what this is all about. The net is becoming more and more transparent to who we are. But as it does, we're having to give up what we think of as privacy. And that's a hugely challenging thing because, as I just found then, to actually be in front of a group of people who are naked as you are, it can be really scary. And I think that's why it's such a confusing issue, because on the one hand, we want the benefit of this transparency and being able to have all these internet services kind of serve us in a personal way. On the other hand, we're still trying to hang on to this notion of privacy. So,
but is that privacy? Are you feeling that because maybe you're a bit older, you've had some life experience? If you were much younger and you had less experience and you've not come across any issues with exposing your identity in the real world or online, does anybody care? I mean, everybody's, there's what, as I say, 7 million profiles on MySpace, at least, and that's the UK only.
I think that's a really important point to realise that this privacy issue is going to play out in different ways across different demographics, and we don't really know whether the MySpace generation will go into their work life with a completely different set of attitudes or if they'll actually want to take back some of that privacy, so...
Right. Do they need to be mindful of that?
Well, I mean, of course they do, but then, on the other hand, if we get beyond the concept of privacy, we get potentially to the point where you have this reputation network, where I was thinking when, I think you were talking about the bullying of a school child and the one whose face was put on a cow. And I was thinking, if you had a way of tracking the persistent identity of the people who actually did that, their reputation would suffer too. So you start to see the possibility of this sort of self-correcting system.
But the problem with that is typically anonymous bullies will use what are called sock puppets. Does anyone here not know what a sock puppet is? Does anyone here not know what astroturfing is? Okay. A sock puppet is an online identity that's created so somebody can bully or yell or scream at someone without foregoing any of the reputation that they have online. Blogger makes it very easy to do. Most social networking sites do, because it's a matter of... actually, Blogger's a special case, because there are users who will decide to let anyone leave a comment on the weblog, which basically allows people to pretend to be 12 different people so they can outnumber somebody else all on their own. And Blogger's system still allows someone who's not a user of Blogger or a different user of Blogger to pose as another user. The system allows it. It's unbelievable.
All you have to do is post their profile URL as the other URL, as the other identity, and use their name, and that's it. It's unless the owner of the weblog spots it and picks it up and deletes it. As far as anyone was concerned, you've just been impersonated. What astroturfing is it's the creation of a fake grassroots movement. So you have about, say, four or five people typically working for a party, and each of those four or five people will pretend to be a dozen people, and next thing you know, there's a grassroots movement out there to push this or yell and scream at the other.
So maybe the answer is to hook someone's identity into the National DNA database.
That's no? You see, these I've gone head to head with some of these people, and the first thing they do is they scream privacy and they scream free speech is another one. But in reality, they're undermining other people's right to free speech by intimidating them, by fraudulently misrepresenting their arguments, and by just not giving them a fair hearing. And it works in a number of ways that I won't go into detail with just now. But the argument that reputations are going to be damaged doesn't really stand up.
Well, it doesn't in the current on the current web. But there's no reason to think that identity technology couldn't have evolved to the point where we could start to correlate.
I think
data
that would be a dangerous thing to do.
Well, it might be dangerous, but it might be inevitable. I mean,
so taking this back to from a media owner's perspective, we have two people here who have built and run big social networks or sites that have social networking elements to them. How do you take account of identity and reputation and build that into the tools and the systems that you're putting there? Mike?
So I think, you know, that I still kind of find this bizarre online-offline thing just really weird. So I kind of agree with, from an identity point of view, that maybe the youth of today is giving away too much information or more information. We consider it too much information because we've never given away that information from a privacy perspective. But how quickly do you think that will be corrected when something happens that somebody gave away their telephone number and the media blows that up to be an enormous issue? How quickly do you think that would generate through the Facebook and MySpace generation of 12, 13, 14-year-olds, and they would all remove their telephone numbers? So there's an element of self-correcting from a community perspective that I think will just happen anyway. But just remember, this is really, really early days in this kind of whole social, the movement of social interaction online compared with, you know, what I grew up with, which was we used to all go and play football over the field, which is a completely different thing. So I think there's a self-correcting element from a community. Communities police themselves to an extent. I think the other element of that is communities. So I think the platform, so the MySpace, the Facebooks, and the live platforms are slightly different in that there's not really necessarily any kind of centre of gravity for people to go there, other than the fact that that they want to interact and they want to be connected to their friends. Sorry, I think from a publisher's perspective, the publishers have content and they have a reason for generating a community around it. And I think the publishers have to take responsibility and the platform providers have to take responsibility for an element of control, policing, and giving the firstly giving the community the tools to police themselves, but also ultimately policing themselves, policing the environment. So if there's a huge fight in here every night, two things will happen. Firstly, the bar will create an environment where it's difficult for you to have a fight. They'll employ bouncers. And secondly, over time, you won't come to this bar anymore. You'll go to another bar where there aren't fights every night. And the same thing will happen online, ultimately. It's just that it's really, really early days, and people haven't realized where the fights are going to break out. And the fights are going to break out where it's unregulated and that the publishers don't take responsibility.
So in terms of self-policing...
I have a quick interjection there, if you don't mind. The problem is, it is early days, and it's growing according to people's expectations. And one thing I've noticed, especially over the last 6 to 8 months, is that people approaching political blogging consider it to be one thing that it really hasn't been until very recently. It's like a big shouting match. It's all about gossip and tabloid treatment. And previously, it wasn't that at all. So, I mean, this is a community that's shaped by perception. People are recruited to it by reading it and experiencing it. So it can actually grow in the wrong direction. It could become a self-destructive ecosystem, as it were.
So self-policing
isn't necessarily enough. I mean, I think we cited Kathy Sierra in the blurb that we put on the website about this whole topic. And for those of you who aren't familiar, I think that's it could be an interesting insight. I think James had some background on that, for those who aren't aware.
So how many people said they knew who Kathy Sierra was? Right.
Okay. It was about 10.
Right. She is basically a very, very well-known blogger and who blogs mainly about technology and education. And she's probably one of the top 100 Technorati blurbers, you know, et cetera, all that business. So very, very well known, very, very heavily linked to it, and very, very good at what she does. And a few months ago, she effectively caused sort of a real sort of storm on this particular part of the blogosphere. The easiest way for me to explain what happened is that she put up a post about a certain experience on Tuesday, and this was in California, remember, and I watched Jeremy Paxman interview Tessa Jowell about it on the Thursday. So I'll really quickly try and tell you what I think happened, because I think it's such a brilliant saga of our times. Kathy Sierra effectively got a nasty stalker. And one of the issues that we're now talking about is that anyone can become famous. So the type of person that David Beckham would probably have teams of people just to deal with was a really very scary thing for her, and she blogged about that experience. Because she is a well-known blogger, she has other well-known blogger friends, including Jimmy Wales, who runs Wikipedia, and Tim O'Reilly, who's kind of Mr. Open Source. And they kind of took up her cause. And what they did was suggested a blogger's code of conduct. Now, to me, the only lesson from that blogger's code of conduct was not to ask technologists about social issues, because they'll codify it. And it made almost no sense at all. The only thing I really thought when I saw it was, because these are two extremely intelligent, able individuals, and I just thought, you have to get out more, guys. Because I think they must have been living in this particular part of the blogosphere and not noticed that MySpace and YouTube had arrived, for which this conduct idea was useless. All sort of furore happened. But then, obviously, the other aspect of these social networks and blogs, et cetera, is they're international. So as far as I can make out, this story about a woman being stalked in a nasty way by California, but a one-on-one instance, one person, obviously it happens all around the world the whole time, who has a higher profile, she's a sort of mini fame, if you like, it kind of got wrapped up with all the other prejudices that exist about the internet. You know, it's where all the paedophiles live, and women can't go there because they'll be, attacked. And if you put out any personal information about yourself, you wake up tomorrow morning without any money,
I'm taking my profile down.
But then what was really scary, and I think this was the interesting bit, the English government, and Tessa Jowell in particular, saw this as a good PR opportunity. And she jumped on it.
I saw that.
Presumably because it ticked every button possible for an aspiring politician. It allowed her to take the moral high ground. It was about women's rights. It allowed her to look like she knew something about the internet. It was all about anti-child abuse. And she went on to Newsnight and was asked... She went on to Newsnight, and Jeremy Paxman started the article with, "We're now going to talk to a minister who wants to ban bloggers."
Brilliant.
So I would just say, that basically it went from one blog post to Jeremy Paxman interviewing an English minister in about 3 or 4 days. The interesting thing is that all these trends are going to continue. Yes, it's early days, but also I think that they're things that we've always had, because it just now seems that when my generation, it was video nasties were going to literally melt the minds of every child in the UK, even though we all got hold of them and we all had them, we'd all seen them and talked about them in the playground. That's what social networks are today. But it was a great, if you are interested in the subject, just look on Wikipedia. It's a wonderful sort of story of our time.
So in the next manifestos, we're going to see a policy point of tough on cyber stalking, tough on the causes of cyber stalking. Brilliant.
I actually said something about this in January before the recent unpleasantness in the UK political blogosphere, saying that if it does get out of control and we don't regulate ourselves, people who know sweet bugger all about it are going to start legislating on us. You know, it's...
Isn't that the case about pretty much anything?
Pretty much anything, but, you know, we've got it tough enough already. As you mentioned, somebody mentioned media prejudice before. If they can badmouth the interwebs, then they will. Because everyone loves paper. You've got to get your information from paper, not from electronics.
There was something else that came out in the Cathy Sierra debate, and I can't remember the names, but I read on I think it was the Doc Searlesware blog, that some of the people who had been accused of leaving these comments were protesting their innocence and saying that actually their accounts had been hacked and the comments weren't from them. And then because they had been seen to have left these comments, hackers had got into their email accounts and taken over their entire online presence. So it's a very, very slippery picture. Because we don't yet have this reliable way of connecting physical identity to online identity, you can get something getting blown into the media, and it seems to be a very simple, clear-cut case of a stalker of this innocent victim. Whereas, in fact, the real picture can be much more complex.
You also have a problem with people who cry wolf. Sorry, Sam. So, for instance, the woman who was, I can say it now because the police said it and the court said it, the woman who was stalking Rachel North, for instance, you read her weblog and she would thank people for all the emails that you sent in. And on every post, it's like zero comments. So all these people are emailing her instead of commenting. It's because they're afraid, you see, because this person that she's victimizing is victimizing me. And I've had this a number of times. I've had... when I was scrutinising an MP through a website, they were calling me a cyber stalker and using 16 different personalities, all these activists who work for the party that the MP belonged to, claiming that I used multiple personalities to, you know, I was everyone who spoke in favour of myself on my website. You know, it just confuses the issue. On top of that, you've got very popular political websites now where every... comment that's negative about the author is shouted down as a brownite sock puppet, or you're a New Labour sock puppet. So the people who are actually sock puppets are yelling sock puppets at the people who are afraid to post under their name because they think they're going to yell at by sock puppets. It gets infuriating. It gets confusing. And at that stage, there's no useful conversation going on. It's just noise.
So this is probably a good time to start bubbling away with questions.